time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt is here with us, and well, a segment that we like to do around this time every year to remind people of some of the wonderful books that we've talked about on the segment that might make great gifts for the readers in your home.
Yeah, and what I did is, in the past, I've said, well, I have so many hockey books, so many running books. I didn't do that this time. What I did was I looked back and I thought about books that have really influenced the way you and I read them. You know, that they've been they've been books that have captured our attention. So some of them we've talked about a number of times, and they're from further back, and some of them are brand new. I want to start with the one we're going to talk to the author of next week, which is Big Game, Small World, A Basketball Adventure by Alexander Wolf. Just a terrific book. If you believe, as I do, that great sport literature is about sport and so much else, then this book, which chronicles his travels all around the world to find basketball in different places and discover how, in part, how the NBA was so smart to be the first of the leagues to really go global. They really, you know, it wasn't just Yao Ming. It wasn't just all the European players, but they went and looked for broadcast deals all across the world. And he traveled to Bhutan and to the former Yugoslavia, to Latvia, to Philadelphia, to China, to Peoria, Illinois. I mean, he went all these different places. And what Wolf does, I think as well as anybody since W.C. Hintz, is do the long-form sports journal entry. You know, that 15 to 16 page, you know, maybe 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 word chapter that you can sit down and read, and you don't need to know, you don't remember everything in it to read the next chapter. So it's a wonderful book for somebody who's busy but loves to read. And it's really, yeah, it's about basketball, but it's about more. A book that taught me as much as any book was one that we all like, Surf and Rescue, George Freeth and the Birth of California Beach Culture by a friend of the show, Patrick Mosier. I should mention that Wolf's book is from Duke University Press. Mosier's is from University of Illinois. I mean, we think we have this idea of the Beach Boys and surf movies and beach blanket bingo and all these kind of things that are supposed to be very California-centric. But little do we know that really Duke Kahanamoku, who we think of as being the person who brought surfing, was only one of the important people that brought this whole idea of beach culture, of a beach life, of wanting to be in the ocean all the time. The other was George Freeth, who had, his dad was a sort of ne'er-do-well, end of the British Empire type of failed entrepreneur. And Freeth ended up coming to California. And the reason we have great beach rescue, the reason we know how to rescue people in rip tides and all these kinds of things comes out of the many things that he did. And it's a really, the great thing about it too is it's an easy book to read. It's not full of a lot of academic stuff. One that'll be on the list every year, Dust Bowl Girls by Linda Reeder, from Algonquin Press, the story of 1930s basketball, women's basketball in Oklahoma. We would not have the kind of women's sports that we have now, and God knows we've got a long way to even the score and a lot of that. And I'm not even sure we'd have had a Title IX by now, but I don't know if we'd have had it when we got it. If it hadn't been for people like the people that were behind Dust Bowl Girls, and also it's a story about how sports can bridge the racial ethnic divide. You know, I often tell people that I know, I can remember, you know, that when if I had stayed in public school in Connecticut where I lived and played the sports I played, I would not have been on integrated teams. There were no black people where I lived. It was a partially by design, but when I got to prep school and I started to play with African American players and what we then they identify themselves as Latin players, you opened up to a whole new world. And one of the funny things is I always talk about that. People think of prep school as being this privileged environment, and I think, well, it was a place where I got to meet a lot of different people of indigenous blood, people from all over the world, and this book Dust Bowl Girls is really well written, and we really had a great fun with her. The next two books are books we had this past year, within the last year or so. Abdi's World, The Black Cactus on Life, Running, and Fun by Abdi Abdurrahman and Miles Schrag at Solstice Magazine. God, was an Abdi fun to have on the radio. Solstice is S-O-U-L-S-T-I-C-E, and we got another great book from them called Catch Me If You Can by Philbert Bailly. Both of those books really will give you insight into just how hard the African runners that started to, whose ascendancy in international distance running began in the late 1950s and 60s, how hard these people worked and the challenges they had to meet to even get to tracks and even get to be running. There's this whole terribly racist notion that, well, these black Africans are born better than the rest of the people. There may be some physiological differences, but these guys work their tail off. Does it help to train at altitude? Yeah, but you know, we have a high, you can train altitude in the United States if you want to, too. Ask Miles and all the people that train out at Flagstaff at 9, 10, 11,000 feet. But those two books, Abdi's World and Catch Me If You Can, I think are wonderful gifts for anybody that wants, not just that likes running or track and field, but wants to understand how difficult it is for some athletes to get where they go. Bleeding Green, A History of the Hartford Whalers by Christopher Green Christopher Price is just a fabulous book. You don't have to have been a Whalers fan, but man, if you just see how Howard Baldwin and his buddies basically conned their way into big time sports, did their very best to make it work, and how Hartford became, for many, many people, they didn't want to get there. Oh, God, I've been traded to Hartford. And then they get to Hartford and they didn't want to leave because they could lead such normal lives and in the suburbs of such a small city. And it also, I think, gives us a really good indication of what's happened how greed has just come to completely rule sports. I mean, think about how Whalers, working on a couple of $1 million payroll when they get started. And Aaron Judge, who I love and I'm glad is with the Yankees, in over 9 years is going to get $360 million, a third of $1 billion to play baseball. Next one, we can't forget Wax Pack, On the Open Road in Search of Baseball's Afterlife. And as you mentioned yesterday, Wax Pack has been optioned for a movie. And I think it'll be a great movie. If people don't remember the story, Brad Baloukian got a number of packs of cards from 1986. And one of them that he opened, he decided he was going to look up and find all the players and go on the road and do it. It's from the University of Nebraska Press, and the big houses didn't want it. Became the New York, an LA Times bestseller. It sold so many copies that they just keep making them. Right? It just goes to show you, if you got a good book, just because Simon & Schuster or Penguin or someone doesn't want it, doesn't mean it isn't good. And that's from Nebraska. And then a book that really, I think, caught us by surprise was The Fast Ride, Spectacular Bid and the Undoing of a Sure Thing. Mm. The research that Jack Gilden put into that book is really something now. And not only was he a knowledgeable turf rider, but friend of the show, Reg Lansbury, is a member of the Turf Riding Hall of Fame, was an early reader of it, and he thought it was a spectacular book as well. I didn't mean a pun on Spectacular Bid. But if you think you know the story of Spectacular Bid, and you think without a doubt Secretariat was the greatest racehorse of all time, this is really something to read because it's a mystery, it's a history, it's a profiles in courage, it's a profiles in debauchery. It's a book that really, really, really deserves a great wide audience. A book that's about home, if you will, One Goal by Amy Bass, which is about Lewiston soccer and its rise and the Somali community there and how the community helped and soccer helped stitch that community together. It's a great book. And, I look over and I see that on my Sports Lit bookshelves every once in a while, and I think, don't forget to remind people, One Goal by Amy Bass. A little quirky book we had, The Sport Marriage, Women Who Make It Work by Stephen M. Ortiz. I had said when they sent it, Illinois sent it to me. I said, I don't know, maybe this could be salacious. This could be sort of, it's a great book. And it really looks at the difficulty of being the spouse of a male sports star in our society. And it differs from being the spouse of a female sports star in that male sports stars get hit on all the time by lots of younger women. And the pressure to just know how you fend off such things can be really important. And the wives talking about the way it affects them and how, you know, the teams expect them to behave a certain way and certain sit in a certain section with all the other wives and the like. It was really a good book. And that's from Illinois. That was Stephen M. Ortiz, The Sport Marriage, Women Who Make It Work. And then three books that I'm just personally fond of. Summer Baseball Nation, 9 Days in the Wooden Bat League by Will Gagan. You know, if you love baseball, you could have as much fun at a Cape Cod League game. You could have as much fun at a college game. And I love going to Maine baseball games. If you love baseball, you love summer, you love the crack of a wooden bat, this book is for you. A book that we've talked about by New York Times bestselling author Michael Powell from Blue Rider Press, Canyon Dreams, A Basketball Season on the Navajo Nation. It is really a remarkable book. And it's not one of these books, white guy goes to save indigenous people. And those books are annoying and we don't want to read them. But this is a book where a man wanted to understand Diné culture and wanted to understand why basketball was so important and why res basketball is so different from high school basketball elsewhere. And he doesn't make the decisions himself. He lets the people, this is the beauty of Michael Powell's book, and I remember we talked about this with him on air. All the characters speak for themselves. He introduces us to the characters, he gives us their background, and then they tell us the story. That is masterful storytelling. That is the way you ought to write a book. Again, Canyon Dreams, A Basketball Season on the Navajo Nation. Last but not least, in our Baker's Dozen, How We Did It, The Subban Plan for Success in Hockey, School and Life by Carl Subban and Scott Colby from Random House, Canada. I had no idea how remarkable the Subban family's story is, how they come from the Caribbean, moved to the cold parts of northern Ontario, north central Ontario, and carve a life where education is extraordinarily important. Carl Subban is a longtime educator. How he and his wife raised the Subban family, and they're not among a lot of their own people. They become right. Canadian, but they never lose a sense of who they are, and how important, especially to PK and Malcolm, education was and is in their lives. And I think that it's a story that hockey tends to tell stories, as they say, through the game. And, you know, I don't know anyone personally who's read nearly as much hockey lit as I have, but guys I know who have read even more say the same thing. Canadian identity is often part of all hockey books. And it's how you become Canadian, you know, your understanding of hockey. This blows a lot of that out of the water. It says, yes, you can become a Canadian by playing hockey, but playing hockey is not enough to make you a Canadian. You adopt this country when you become an immigrant, and you're proud to become Canadian. You work hard to become a citizen. Yes, you may want to go back to little villages in the tropics where you're from, but you adopt an entire country, not just it's the sport for which it's best known. And I really liked when we had Carl on. He was just such a jovial, enthusiastic guy. And he's like, you know, this is how we did it. We think it works for us. There's no lecturing in here. There's no telling you if you want your kids to grow up the right way, you have to do this. And he admits, and they all admit when they didn't do things exactly correctly and some of the struggles he had as an educator. But How We Did It, The Subban Plan for Success in Hockey, School, and Life. And again, if anybody wants a copy of this list, they can email me through the University of Maine English Department, and I will be happy to forward it to them.
That's awesome. Good stuff there. And as you mentioned, Bruce, next week, the great Alexander Wolf will be with us.
I know. I am so psyched. Yeah. You know, when Phil Razor said, I know Alexander Wolf, you might want to talk to him. I was like, yeah, I guess. So big shout out to Phil. Get his book, Headhunting. I didn't talk about poetry books this time because we've done so much poetry lately. But again, if anybody's interested in any book we've ever talked about on Sports Lit, you just sort of remember what it's like or maybe part of the name or whatever, let me know and I'll try and get the title to you.
Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate it.
My pleasure as always.